I was to say to you,
it was 20 years ago today, how would you finish the line? Sergeant Pepper told the band to play. Yeah. Very scriptural, biblical text this morning. Yeah. Something about Sergeant Pepper, which has actually very little to do with what we're going to be talking about today. Thinking, how does Sergeant Pepper fit into the miraculous catch of fish? I didn't remember it being read. But think back 20 years, if you would. Not necessarily today, but roughly 20 years. Where were you, most of you? Here, if it was a Sunday, but generally in life, what was going on? Was it a good day? Was it a bad day? Was life going well for you? Was life going a struggle? What you remember of it was fine. My guess is you probably don't remember most of it, if you're anything like me. I don't remember what I did 20 minutes ago, never mind 20 years. So what about in the period between then and now? How's it been for you, the last 20 years? Been easy? Been a struggle? Up and down. It's a good answer. Up and down. Time slips by, doesn't it? Like grains of sand falling effortlessly through our fingers. Sometimes we struggle to stop them, but if it's dry sand, it will fall. Or what about effortlessly flowing from the top of an hourglass to the bottom? Yes, I am old enough to remember hourglasses and oil lamps. So much has been achieved, I guess. Certainly in my life, I've achieved things. So much has been left undone, including some things that I know I should have achieved, but haven't. So many successes to build on, yes? It's not just me. Have you had successes? So many failures to learn from and to wish that they could be undone. So much joy to celebrate. So much pain to be born even to this day and beyond. So much to be proud of. And so much to regret. So much to be thankful for. And so much to forgive and to be forgiven for. 20 years. Go back a little further to the New Testament times. Afterward, Jesus appeared to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee, the Sea of Tiberias. Afterward. Always wonder why that word is there. The words are there to remind us that something else has happened. And the reading that you're reading on a day doesn't stand in isolation. It stands as part of the whole of scriptures. Each story, each statement fits within the whole. We're told later on in the reading that this is the third time that Jesus had appeared to his disciples after his death. So after what? After 3 years ago being cobbled by some roving preacher who took me away from everything I understood and knew as a fisherman. Instead, I would follow him and be a fisher for people, whatever that meant. 3 years of doing that, 3 years of thinking this man must be the Messiah. He just fits the bill so perfectly, and yet he's been arrested. He's been whipped to within an inch of his life. He's been hung on a cross for no crime. And he's died and been buried. After that. But that wasn't the end. We see him alive again. He's back with us. Fantastic. Amazing. He must be the Messiah, for he's risen from the dead. But then, just as we get used to him being with us again, he's gone. And we're alone. And lonely and confused. After all of this, what did we say about how life was treating us? It's been up and down. That's what the disciples were going through. We can read back to the miraculous catch of fish and say, great, we're going fishing. Fantastic. But for the disciples at the time, get into their shoes, total, complete, and utter confusion and despair. And yet, after all of that, or into all of that, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee. And it happened this way. Simon Peter, note he's still called Simon Peter, he's in transition from Simon to Peter, Thomas, known as the twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, we know they're James and John, and two other disciples were together. Why on earth don't they get named? Why? If John can bother to tell us that he's counted the fish and there were 153 of them, why can he not bother to ask two names? No idea why. But one thing it does for us is, have you ever been in a meeting or in a group where you feel that everyone else is more important than you? Yeah. That you wouldn't dare to say, hello, I'm Ray, by the way. Well, you wouldn't say that anyway. Obviously, you'd use your own name. But we're not worth thinking of, not worth mentioning. We're the unnameables, if you like. We're not worth naming. And yet these were two disciples, as we are disciples. They were worthy to be with Christ. Just to encourage you, if ever you feel that everybody else is more important than you, that they get named, you at least have got a mention in the sermon because Ray is interested to know why you're not named. That God is just as interested in each of us, whether we or everybody else thinks we're important or not, we are important to God. Moving on, verse 3. Peter says, I'm going out to fish. I love fishing. You go, you cast out the net. I've already given you the demonstration once. I've done it wrong because I typically, which hand? I don't even know which hand I'd use. I do it that often. Do you wind? Anyway, but you cast out the net, you watch the thing, hoping it will bobble up and down, and you wait for it to bobble, and you cast out again, and wait for it to bobble, and you wait. And then you go home via the chip shop buying your cod and chips, and you go home and you talk about what you might have been eating if you caught anything. Fishing, fantastic waste of a day, isn't it? What a way to waste a day. But Simon Peter is doing something different here. Remember that Simon was a fisherman. What Simon knew was fishing. Simon, with the other disciples, had been told by Jesus to go to Galilee and to wait, and the Spirit would come and life would go on. I'm not saying it's definite, but just for to humour me, I'm going to say that it's just a little bit possible that what Simon Peter was doing here, bearing in mind the up and down confusion, was saying, I've had enough, I'm going back to what I know. When the going gets tough, the so-called pretending to be tough people go back to what's normal and natural for them. I'm going out to fish. It's almost I'm going down the garden to eat worms. And the others, always willing to do what Peter suggested, weren't they? We'll go with you. Yeah, we won't wait either. We're going to go back. Maybe, just maybe, that's what was going on. But be that as it may, they went out and got into the boat, and that night, they worked all night, they caught nothing, nil, zilch, not a pilchard, so to speak. And early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. Only 100 yards. They knew what Jesus looked like. He called out to them, friends, haven't you any fish? Now, am I the only person in the world who wishes that the written word had tone of voice built into it? Here they are, they flogged their guts out, so to speak, all night long, work, 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 for nothing. And there's only one thing worse than a night like that. It's having some bright spark noticing. No, I'm sure Jesus wouldn't have used this tone of voice, but friends, haven't you got any fish? Just imagine whether he was smiling because he knew that it may have gone back to their old life and had caught nothing because they're not going to be successful unless they follow Christ. But what about the word no? What sort of tone of voice can you imagine? I don't know if you've lived in fishing towns. The trawlermen tend to have a language all of their own, using words that we may not use. No, we have not caught anything. So Jesus says something that actually is stranger than it looks on first reading. He just says, throw your nets on the right side. Some people have said that he's only 100 yards, he could see the fish all hiding the other side where they've been hiding all night long. I guess the fishermen might have seen the other side of the boat as well. But for me, I think Jesus is saying something different, because as I understand it, and I'm open for correction, the bloke who's driving the boat sits at the back. I guess the guys that are doing the fishing stand the other end, facing that way, in a fairly small boat. And typically they would be right-handed. Put your hands up if you're left-handed. Right, now that's interesting, because one person who is left-handed used their right hand to say that they're left-handed. And it would work the same way as well. If I said, put your hand up if you were right-handed, somebody would put their left hand up. So most of us are right-handed, and that's the case everywhere we go, unless you go to the Association of Left-Handed People's annual meeting. So you would throw your nets with your strongest hand, which is to, if the boat's going that way, it's to your left. Jesus says, throw the nets on the right. He doesn't say, get a rod instead of a net. He says, do it the same, but different. Throw them on the right. Do what you have always done, but be willing to do it differently, and you will see results. It's a little bit like you've had a hall out the back of your church for decades. Maybe not a lot of decades, but for decades. And you're going to put, as I understand it, another hall there in its place. It's going to be the same, but it's going to be very different. Do the same, but do it different. Sometimes when people come and talk about change in the church, they talk about doing absolutely everything different to what you've done before. So it's so unrecognisable that not only do the rest of Wheatley not want to come, but you don't want to come either, because everything is so different and strange. Well, Jesus is saying, just be a bit calmer than that. Do it the same, but different. And the challenge for you is, obviously we've done the building plans, we've done that step, but the hard work starts when the building is finished, because buildings are there to be used, aren't they? The hard thing is to say we're going to do it the same, because we are still Wheatley URC, but we're going to do it different. We're going to see how Jesus is wanting us to use this building for his glory and for the benefit of the community here. And I can't guarantee that you will catch 153 new members, large ones at that. But we can dare to trust that if we follow Christ, we will find success, at least in his eyes, in his ways. In this story, when they did, they were unable to haul in the net because of the large number of fish. And when the disciple whom Jesus loved, that's John himself, said to Peter, it is the Lord. And as soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it is the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he was naked, and he jumped into the water. Peter, the impetuous, the one who likes getting out of boats onto the water, grabs his tunic. Okay, he's naked. He's going to see his Lord, who he's just recognised. So, of course, he wants to get dressed. Would you go and visit the Queen naked? No. No, you wouldn't. But is there something else going on? Because I am I'm almost infatuated by the boats. I'm sorry. Bear with me and humour me. He's just gone back to the boats when he thought Jesus wasn't there. He now wants to jump out of the boats and run to shore when Jesus is. And he picks up his tunic not only for decency's sake, but because just possibly he wants to make sure that he's never going to have to go back to the boats again to pick up his tunic. He wants everything with him so he's ready to move. And the challenge for us is, how much are we holding on to things of the past that will stop us moving into the future? The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they weren't far from shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals
with fish already on it and some bread.
Jesus had already prepared breakfast for the disciples. Now, it's a wonderful thing that we could just sit here thinking, God will do the mission in Wheatley. And I don't know about you, but I believe in a God who has all the power to do all the mission and ministry he wants to do, to draw people to him as he wants to do, as God wants to do. And yet Jesus says something special here, even to the unnamed ones. He says, and I'm expanding it a little bit, he says, I've got fish for you all, but bring some of yours. What have you got to bring? Do you remember the 5 loaves and 2 fishes? At least the Bible tells us it fed 5,000, or at least 5,000, because people argue whether it was just 5,000 men or 5,000 people, 5,000 men plus the women and children or not. 1 packed lunch. In other words, one small thing given to Christ becomes huge as he multiplies it. But it's not just about God multiplying it, because he'd already got the fish he needed. For me, it's about God saying to each of us, even if we don't feel worthy of a name, he will call us by name and he will say, whatever little thing you've got, maybe you're not as good as somebody else's. Maybe you feel inadequate compared to others. But bring what you have got and we can share it together. So Simon Peter climbed back into the boat and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153, but with so many, even so, the net was not torn. And Jesus said to them, and hear this invitation yourselves. Come and have breakfast. Dad, breakfast is ready is one of the nicest things I've ever heard in my life. You know what it's like typically on your birthday and your family are there? This is how it works in my house anyway. So I always invite family up for my birthday. So I can wake up to the smell of bacon and coffee. I've already been smelling your coffee that wasn't even made yet. So I'm looking forward to coffee later. But you know what it's like when you're half awake, half asleep, and you think, is it worth getting up today? Bacon, get up. And the words, it's ready. You don't have to do anything. Just come and eat. Jesus says to us, yeah, come and bring what you've got, but he says, I want you to be with me. Let's sit down. Let's enjoy time together. Let's enjoy good food. Sometimes we get all mixed up in the work of church and in the work of the discipleship we follow, that it's easy, it's been easy for me at times, to forget that invitation of Christ. And he invites us to breakfast every single day. Come and spend time with me. None of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? Because they knew it was the Lord. I haven't got time to go into why they didn't dare ask him, why they didn't recognize him earlier. But Jesus came, took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. And now this was the third time that Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. So we're back to where we started. But you remember I said that Simon Peter was in between being Simon and Peter. Simon, the Greek word, I believe, means the reed, easily blown. And that's what we see Peter as, isn't it? I'll have a go at that. I'll have a go at that. Oh, Jesus is over there. And all easily thrown and easy to deny as well, because he hasn't got the strength. Peter means the rock, rather different in character. And Simon Peter was transitioning in character between somebody who in his own strength was very weak into somebody who in God's strength could be very strong. When they finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, and you'll notice he calls him Simon, son of John. Do you love me more than these? Do you love me more than these? These what? Do you love me more than these other disciples love me? Don't think so. Don't think so, because would Jesus ever want us to be proud in our boasts that our love's greater than someone else's? Or do you love me more than you love these other people? That's possible. Do you love me more than these? God wants us to put him first and people second. But I did confess to being infatuated with the boats and the nets, the old way of life. I personally believe that this means Simon Peter glancing down the beach to the boats
to his old way of making money, to his old possessions, to everything he knew, everything he felt comfortable in. I called you to follow me once and you came. When the going got tough, you went back. Now it's decision time. Do you? Do you love me more than you love your old way of life? And he would say to us, do you love me more than you love life without me? Whatever that means for each of us. Yes, Lord, says Peter, almost as if it's easy to say. Almost as if he's forgotten why Jesus needs to ask him again. I'm back with you, so of course I love you. It's Sunday between 10 and 11:15. I love Jesus at that time of day. It's easy, relatively. So Jesus says, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus says, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus says, take care of my sheep. And the third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Never mind, do you love me more than these, but do you love me? Eyeball to eyeball. I guess if I've just told somebody I loved them twice and they asked me again, I might wonder what's going on. I'm hurt. Don't you believe me? You're telling me I'm just making it up? What's the issue? I've told you I love you just twice now. Not once when we got engaged and once when we got married, but twice just now. Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him a third time and he said, Lord, again, tone of voice, who knows? But Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. I've told you three times, but you know it anyway because you know all things. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes things happen that we don't like. And yet, good comes through them as we look back years later. Sometimes we never see the good that comes out of things, I know that, but sometimes things don't go right. We don't get a job that we thought was exactly the right job for us. What's worse, our main competitor gets the job. And it might be, we may not get a better job, but we get a job that suits our life far better. And we can look back and say, I'm glad I didn't get that job. At the time, we don't see it that way. Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him a third time, do you love me? Do you sometimes not understand God's ways? It's true for me. Why would Jesus need to ask him three times? Sometimes it's because Jesus understands us and he understands what we need. The reading started with the word afterward. And what had happened just a few days before, Peter had denied that he even knew Jesus. How many times before the cock crowed? Three times. And so three times Jesus comes and says, do you love me? Scholars would say that there might be a different word for love each time, that there's a different sort of love he's asking about each time. But ultimately he is correcting, allowing Peter to say, I'm sorry I denied you. Yes, I love you. I'm sorry I denied you. And if we do things wrong, maybe don't resist God's discipline on us. Look for what God is trying to correct in us so we might follow him more faithfully. It's amazing, isn't it? Because Jesus then says to Peter, you know what I went through on that cross? If you follow me, that's exactly where you're going. Wow. Do you love me more than these nets? No, thanks. I'd rather have the nets. And yet Peter was given the chance for his love for the Lord to take him anywhere. Peter tries it on again. He turns around and he sees John following. He says, well, what about him? What about him? Jesus says, why do you worry about him? I'm talking to you. You must follow me. I didn't ask whether John loved me more than everything else. I asked you. So it's a little bit like when we come to be using our buildings in new and exciting ways. Maybe we'd need somebody who's willing to be first to sign up on the sheet for whatever it is we're going to be doing. And don't be the unnamed person who thinks, I can't put my name on the list until 15 important people are willing to be there. Jesus says, you must follow me. Put your name on the list. To think that you have your part to play. Yes, we're part of the larger body. We've acknowledged that in our worship. But God calls each and every one of us
to worship him, whether we gather together on a Sunday or not, for each of us to have a worship life, to each of us to serve him, to each of us to share his good news with everyone else. Jesus says, doesn't matter about everybody else. Today, here and now, I'm talking to you and asking, do you love me more than these?